If you've been reading internet email lists lately, you'll know that there are many blind people who just can't get enough audio-described television. Narrative television has been in this business for a long time now, but just under a year ago, they got on the web. Now you can hear old movies audio-described whenever you want. Jim Sobol is the founder of Narrative Television. Welcome to Main Menu, Jim. A pleasure to have you along. The actual story of how Narrative Television was formed is an interesting one and quite inspirational, really. Tell us a bit about that first.
Well, the Narrative Television Network kind of started out of me losing my sight myself, and I had not been aware of anybody else doing anything in the field of accessibility. And after losing my sight, I did not adapt very well. I did not avail myself of services and help and support groups and things like that. So I just kind of moved into a little room in the back of my house and thought I would stay there for the rest of my life, and never thought about venturing out or doing anything else. Well, prior to losing my sight, I had used that room as a kind of a home video place for in my home where I kept my classic films. And I had a whole number of classic movies that I had saved on videotape. Well, after losing my sight, they became somewhat superfluous. Well, one day, in just sheer boredom, I put on one of those old movies, and I thought, you know, just by being able to listen to this, I could follow along. And it worked for a while, and then somebody shot somebody, and the car sped away, and I got really frustrated, and I said, somebody ought to do something about that. About that time, I met a young lady who was legally blind named Kathy Harper, and she and I began discussing the possibility of adding an extra soundtrack. We started in the home video business, could not keep up with the demand for product, and then in 1988, we went on our first television station here in the United States, and we have grown significantly since then, and that's kind of how it got started.
How much content, say on a weekly basis, are you putting out there now?
About 20 hours a week.
And is that fresh content? So you might have 20 hours of new material that people haven't seen before, or is there some recycling that goes on?
Some recycling, but every week we have a kind of a new crop of programming that comes out.
And is this pretty much widely available throughout the United States?
Yes, it is. We're still fighting the some of the distribution pockets where we're not available, but we're really getting there. And currently here in the States, our Federal Communication Commission, which is who kind of oversees legally the television industry, is in the process of deciding how to mandate this going forward in the future. So it should really open up the entire field of accessibility.
What's your view on that notice of proposed rulemaking? I take it that as an organization in the field, you would have submitted on that process.
We did indeed. Overall, we are very much in favor of it. It is, you know, I am not a big fan of governments having to mandate things, but it is obvious after 10 or 12 years in this that the industry is not going to include visually impaired people unless they are forced to do so.
Is there a standard for this kind of content right now, if not a formal one, some sort of de facto standard? Because, for instance, I know there are other organizations in the U.S. doing this. Do you get together and kind of ensure that there's some sort of minimum standard of narration, et cetera, some standards you put in place?
We kind of have our own system in-house. We have 10 or 12 people that write narrative scripts for us, and we have our own rules that we've developed about over a decade of doing this. And I know the other organization kind of does the same thing. We monitor their work, and they monitor ours as well. And so, yeah, I think there has kind of been a standard evolving. Whether or not it's been formalized, it's still there.
Do you sell the movies, or are they only available on TV?
They are available on TV. They are available on a loan basis, free across the country, through the National Library for the Blind here in America. And then we've just started recently putting some of them on the internet.
Right, and that's what really attracted me to get you on this particular show, because a lot of our focus is on all sorts of technology, and somebody pointed me to this site, and as somebody living outside of the US, where it can often be difficult to get US copyright material cleared because of what I consider to be bizarre copyright restrictions. It was wonderful to be able to hear quite a large variety of this stuff. How did that come about? And tell us a little about what's featured on there.
Well, it kind of started when I heard about the technology, because with the distribution that's going on, we've always been looking for new sources of distribution. And I heard about it. In fact, I do a lot of public speaking. And I was over in Hawaii making a speech for an organization. And while there, a gentleman came and streamed my speech onto the Internet. And as part of that, I kind of got fascinated with that technology and started exploring it. And then shortly after, the people at Yahoo and Broadcast.com approached us and were very interested in that. That's kind of how I got started.
Now, how many movies do you have on there right now on the website? Because for people who haven't been there, you can actually tune into these and listen to full-length films using, I think it's only Read Audio technology right now, and there's quite a selection there.
Yeah, I think there are 30 or 40 films on there all the time. We always try to add new ones as they become available. And the nice thing about them is they are available on demand 24 hours a day. So whenever someone wants to go to narrativetv.com and select a movie, the movie starts when you're ready.
What sort of response have you had from people to that innovation?
What is really amazing, in the first month it was on, which was last summer, it came on kind of in late July, early August of last summer, we had 16,000 people actually log on and watch a movie, which is a really amazing number, seeing as we had not even publicized it yet. So we're really excited about it, and it's continued to grow from there, and it's a wonderful distribution system.
Is it just audio on demand, or is the picture there as well in the stream?
There is picture as well. There's audio and video.
I notice in listening to it that because of that, and presumably you're trying to cram the video and the audio into a format that modem users can use, so you don't exclude those people. Is there a possibility that you might in the future offer just the audio for blind people? Because when you've got audio and video, it kind of compromises the sound quality a little.
There is some discussion with our technical people at Broadcast.com of doing that, and I'm sure it will be available at some point in the future. They also, obviously, the technology is improving every day. It's amazing the strides they're making. So it may not be long with the new high-speed lines that are available that it's no longer a factor. I don't know.
So who's watching this stuff, not just on the web, but overall in the US and around the world where you have your markets? I understand that you've been somewhat surprised to see that it's not just blind people watching this stuff.
No, it is. A survey here in the United States tells us that 60% of our audience are fully sighted people who simply enjoy our programming. And I have always been amazed by that.
Why do you think that is? What's the attraction?
One of the things that when we first started and we went on cable television here in the States, we had to deliver exactly two-hour blocks of programming to our affiliates around the country. We have 1,200 stations that carry us. Well, our movies are never exactly 2 hours long. They may be an hour and 38 or an hour and 43 or whatever the case may be. Well, in order to make up that difference, the only thing I could come up with was I decided to start a talk show, and I interview some of the movies that are in the movie stars. Well, a lot of big-name stars were willing to come on the show and talk about the movie. So for people that like classic films, when we first went on television, they could not only see a Katharine Hepburn movie, but they could actually hear Miss Hepburn talking about her role in the film and, you know, her memories of that, so on and so forth. So I think that was a lot of the initial interest.
How do you go about selecting which movies you're going to describe?
We try to pick the best films we can. Obviously, a good film narrated is accessible, and a bad film narrated is still a bad film. There's nothing I can do to turn a bad film into a good film. So we try to get the best film we can. We try to get films where we have the widest possible distribution. As you pointed out, some of the accessible programming is not available outside of the States, and that is not good. I mean, we would like to serve as many people as we can, so we try to look for things that we can release in home video or the web or whatever the case may be, and get as much bang for the buck, as it were.
When you decide that you're going to describe a particular movie, I guess then you go through the copyright clearance process. Do you have a law now that guarantees that at least within the US you're entitled to that process, or do you have to seek clearance every time you want to do one?
We have to seek clearance every time we want to do one. There is, as we speak, no law that circumvents that at all. We have to go and license that television show or movie just like anyone else would.
Do you ever get refused access, refused permission to describe them?
Many, many times.
What's the justification cited for that?
Well, their theory is that we are showing their movie on cable, and that has a limited value to it, and they think we're taking some of that value away from it. That is their theory. Or, you know, a lot of times they will say, yeah, you can narrate this film, but we want X hundred thousands of dollars in order to do that, and then I have to license it just as if I were showing it on one of the major networks.
Is resistance dwindling? Are you finding that there's a greater acceptance of audio-described content?
Yes, I think so, and some of the networks are starting to understand that there is a legitimate audience out here, and for a small investment and a little bit of work, they can garner a whole new audience, and that turns into numbers, which translates into money and ad revenue. So there's an economic model that really makes sense.
Now, just to clarify, I take it that when people are watching your content on their cable channel, it's not essential for them to have any sort of special channel or box or anything like that to hear the content, right?
That is correct. We distribute our programming in two separate formats. First is called openly narrated, which means you turn on that channel at that time and you hear the narrator. You have no choice. The other, we do some closed narrated programming, which you have to hit a button on the television called the second audio program channel, but that comes standard on every television in the States. So you don't have to get a special cable or a special subscription or any special equipment.
What impact do you think digital television will have on this kind of content? Presumably it would free up space in the spectrum, as it were, for more of this material.
Tremendous improvement will happen when we get digital, because as you pointed out, there is so much more bandwidth there and the ability to put a narrative track in there. It will also make a big difference as we deliver product via home video, because when we do home video for a VHS tape or just your home VCR, you have to have a separate tape. One tape's narrated, one's not. But on DVD, the digital video disc, that can be buried into the bandwidth and be available. So if people want it, they turn it on. If they don't, they don't turn it on. Very, very similar to closed captioning.
Has narrative TV got into the DVD market at this point?
We have not gotten into the DVD market because it is a content-based issue. I anticipate doing that probably by this time next year.
How many people involved now with narrative TV, this little thing that started with a kind of a broom cupboard type studio in the mid-80s? It's obviously expanded considerably since then to a very successful enterprise.
It has. We have a staff of writers, say 10 or 12 people that actually can write the things that we're going to narrate. We have our own studios in-house, and then we have 1,200 different affiliates around the country that carry our programming. So it's quite a group of people that are committed. But, you know, as far as narrative television, we still have a fairly small family, and we kind of like it that way.
Do you think there'd ever come a time when blind people will have their own cable channel, or perhaps in the future their own digital channel that will carry nothing but audio-described content?
Yes, I think so, and I also think there will be a time in the near future where all television stations and networks will carry some narrated programming on demand. So you push the button, you hear it or you don't, and there won't be a separate channel. And I think that will be a vastly superior improvement to having our own channel, will be when any channel, anytime, anywhere, is simply a matter of pushing the button and you hear the narrator.
Given that you guys are experts in this technology, I'm interested in finding out whether you've explored the question of advertisements and the fact that so many times there's a product that is of interest to a blind person and you get the announcer saying, phone the toll-free number on your screen now, and you have no idea what the number is. Is that something that you've looked into?
Yes. In fact, we've talked to a number of our advertisers and told them this is not about just blind people. This is everybody. Because advertisers sometimes forget that people don't tune into that channel for that hour to watch the ads. They're watching a show. So when a commercial comes on, they are likely to be moving around, getting another sandwich, whatever the case may be. And we have had discussions with a number of advertisers that it's in their best interest, with or without blind people, to make that advertisement audio accessible.
How's the industry responding to those comments?
A number of them have responded very, very well. We just met with a home shopping channel, which is a 24-hour service where people can buy things all the time. There is no programming other than things are for sale. And I, in addition to what I do for narrative television, I write quite a bit. And one of my books was available on this home shopping channel. So I was a guest, and we were discussing my book. And at a certain point, I told them, look, saying that the number on the screen is there if you want to order this book does not help people like me or people that may not be watching or whatever the case may be. So they have started doing that more and more.
So really this whole concept has really become a way of educating the wider community about the needs of blind people in a very positive way.
Yes, and we try to look at our business not so much as a charity thing or you ought to do this because it's the right thing. We try to explain that these are millions of people who are real-life consumers who spend real-life money, and they would be most happy to buy your products and services if they were accessible to them.
Perhaps you could give us the website for people who haven't visited and would like to check out these movies from narrative television on the web.
Simply go to narrativetv.com, and 24 hours a day, the movies are there, and they start when you want them to.
And you simply must have the Real Player installed on your system, which many people who are listening to this show will, of course, have, and you're ready to roll.